Draft Podcast. I'm your host, Dalton Miller, joined as always by my co-host, Corey Kinnon, the fake Corey Kinnon on X/Twitter, whatever you want to call it. And I believe he is Daft on Draft at the other one, which is Blue Sky, which is the one that we all should be using at this point. We are getting away from Twitter. We are moving over to Blue Sky. I've actually really been enjoying it. There's a lot more customization that you can do with the content that you see and are able to interact with. Mm-hmm. And so you can curate your timeline a lot easier than you can on X, especially now that the people you have blocked can see your shit, which means Catapult can see your shit. So be careful with the tape that you are posting online because they will slap you down for it. With that said, I'm sorry if my camera goes in and out because my face is dark. It will probably try to auto into me quite a bit or autofocus me quite a bit. It is what it is. I can't fix it today. We will fix it going forward while I am in Connecticut still. There's a lot going on in my life, but we are here. Corey, how are you doing in your life?
Yeah, I'm good. I just got over a cold, so I'm feeling a lot better now. If people watch on YouTube, you can see me muting and coughing pretty frequently on camera. So, but that seems to be by the wayside now. It's mostly just now the congestion stuff that you just feel like you have to sneeze or spit every 30 seconds. So, other than that, I'm doing okay. I'm ready to talk ball. So, just dropped another mock draft on Daft on Draft today. So, those are always, I'm trying to do one every other week. I don't love doing mock drafts, but I'm also honest about the supply and demand of the draft industry and people want to read them. So
yes.
I dropped a 2-round mock today. So that's always fun to get out. And so I'm feeling good. Ready to talk some ball.
Yeah, I'm doing a top 100 for PFN by the end of the week. And I'm doing a 7-rounder for them next week. So fun times for me. Let's get into it. Dafter draft day. It's probably our favorite day. I mean, we love building prospects and we're going to start building our big board tomorrow, which is going to be a lot of fun as well. But these are fun. We get to get a little takey during these ones. And we're going to start off with this. Georgia edge rusher Mykael Williams should be a top 10 pick in this draft class. Corey, are you dafting it or are you drafting it?
Man, I think I'm dafting it.
Ooh.
I think I'm dafting it.
Number 8 overall prospect on Dane Brugler's board, by the way.
Yeah. Not to say that he won't. Man, he has 2 sacks and 14 pressures this year. And in Georgia's 2 losses, he has a total of 2 pressures in those games combined. Like, I get that he's an alien. And in this draft class, like, yeah, there's a good chance that it'll happen. He's an alien. He's got great vines for arms. He's explosive as it gets. Like, he's going to test off the charts. That's a really steep bet, though. Especially when, like, it's a pretty deep pass rush class. To feel like you draft a guy because it's a bad class or because he has freak traits. But I don't think he's anywhere near as nuanced or refined as a pass rusher as he needs to be right now. He had a really good game against Texas, against Kelvin Banks. But again, I think that the length discrepancy played a huge role in that game. And we've talked about a lot of that stuff. But like, generally, I don't think he has a plan. I don't think he has a good idea of how to use his hands. And I don't think he has a counter. Like, there's a lot to his game that I just don't think is there yet. So why, if that's the case, I mean, I'm assuming Abdul Carter's going edge 1, right? But we're talking about a lot of, like, why not just take his teammate Jalen Walker, who can give you some off-ball versatility as well and is kind of a nuanced pass rusher. Why not take one of the other pass rushers? We're talking about a class where seven of them might go in the first round, right? So I don't know, man. That's really steep. But I say that, and then I mocked him as my edge three in my mock draft to Jalen Walker and Abdul Carter. So at 18th overall to the 49ers. I'm still going to adapt it because, like, I compared to 2022, where Trayvon Walker went first overall. And Trayvon Walker only had six sacks. But Trayvon Walker also had 34 pressures. That's 20 more than Mykal has, and we're nearing the end of the season. And we're talking about in the big games, he had 11 pressures and a sack in the college football playoffs. And then we're talking about his versatility as well, where he played three tech 105 snaps, five tech 100 snaps, and then edge 360 snaps. So they're not even really the same players, plus being a freak athlete on top of that as well. Mykal Williams just doesn't seem like a player who is visible in games where Georgia needs to be visible right now. And that's tough for me to stake on right now.
Well, his most visible game was Texas.
Yeah, and for sure.
They beat the dull crap out of Texas.
Yeah.
Injured early, mm-hmm. pitch count. He's played 40 snaps twice. He was kind of used as a designated pass rusher in the middle of the year, you know, for Mississippi State and for Texas, where he only played five run defense snaps. And, you know, part of that is Texas kind of using the passing game as an extension of their run game because, I mean, let's just be honest, mm-hmm. Quinn Ewers, ADOT's two. So I think when I look at him and when I look at how edge rushers have kind of developed throughout time, you used to have guys like Mykal Williams or of that ilk of kind of freaky, athletic, long dudes who didn't produce a lot in college or never really figured it out technically in college. Yeah. And then they were drafted high and they busted. But now we live in an era where as long as these guys get with the right positional coaches in the offseason and are working with the right people in the offseason, these Donnell Hunter, freaks of nature type dudes mm-hmm. are hitting. And they're hitting hard these days. And so, like somebody with Trayvon Walker, I think is a little bit different because I think he was big, physical, long, and agile and explosive. But Walker has more bend and he like legitimately might have 36 inch arms. Like he is a freak of nature mm-hmm. anatomically. And so I think teams are going to see that. They're going to see those interior reps that he had against Texas where he's standing up against double teams and holding his ground. And they're going to say, I can coach that dude. I can coach that dude into being one of the best pass rushers in the NFL within 2 or 3 years. And so I do think that he ends up going top 10. I really, truly do. I think that all the tools are in the toolbox. And I think that if Georgia can make a little bit of a run in the college football playoff and he has his best tape ahead of him against the best competition and he's playing, you know, now closer to 40 snaps a game instead of the 20 to, I mean, he didn't play more than 25 snaps until week 8 against Texas, mm-hmm. not more than 25 snaps. He's played 220 all year. So this is a guy who still hasn't played a ton of football this year so far. But when we look back to last year and when we look back to 2022, we're looking at 33 pressures in 2022, 26 in 2023, six sacks in each season. And so we've seen the pass rush productivity in the past. I want to know if we're going to get and we're going to approach those snap counts this year in the next couple of weeks, because I do have to wonder, why is a dude that is this freaky that should be this good against the run, why is he not playing 70 snaps a game or close to 70 snaps a game? Is it something physically? Is it something that he can't do conditionally that he's not able to play that many snaps? I want to figure it out because I do think all of the tools are there, but there are, in my opinion, more questions with him than there are some of these other pass rushers. At the end of the day, for me, it's Abdul Carter, it's Shamar Stewart, and I know Nick Scorton has kind of fallen out of favor, but it's him. And then Michael, like for me, Michael is with those two dudes. And I know that a lot of people like James Pierce. I think James Pierce is more of a two down guy who is a kind of a three down, like a little bit in the Brian Burns thing, where I don't think he'll ever be a very good run defender, but what he brings as a pass rusher is important enough to where you take him very, very high. But I think the idea of what Michael Williams could be at the NFL level is going to entice teams to take him within the top 10.
Yeah, it's hard to argue. It's a pretty traits-based experience. The NFL draft is a pretty traits-based
and especially process. At positions, in my opinion, like positions like edge rusher, positions mm-hmm. like defensive tackle, positions. I mean, honestly, just kind of anywhere on the defensive side of the ball, because it is such a reactionary position. But if you can play proactively, like on the defensive line as a pass rusher, run defending is a little bit different because it is reactive. But if you can play as a proactive athlete and you are that freaky, if you can get the technical side of things down, you should be dominant. And so I think that's kind of how teams are looking at it these days.
Yeah, and it's a position where, like, it's not like quarterback. It's not like cornerback. Not even really safety. It's
there a are a few where, positions like, where you have to think less.
Yeah, and not only that, but it's one of the few positions, defensive edge, defensive tackle, wide receiver, probably not even tight end if you're drafted early as a tight end, where, like, you can limit your snaps and your opportunities and still have a big-time role on a team as well. So I think that also plays into to favor with Michael Williams in this case. Let's talk about the running backs again. We talked about the running back class on Dafter Draft a few weeks ago now, where we kind of had a discussion about RB2 between Nick Singleton and Caleb Johnson, the two Penn State guys. In recent weeks,
The two Big Ten guys.
The two Big Ten guys, yeah.
Yeah.
In recent weeks, though, Omarion Hampton, including this big game against Wake Forest that got him a helmet sticker, has done Omarion Hampton things where he's just running through own tackles and he's did you see that touchdown run where he literally hurled through the trenches and then squeezed his way into the end zone? Did you see that?
Yeah, it was hilarious. Yeah. Oh, yeah. I watched the whole tape from Wake Forest.
Yeah, unbelievably fun. So let's re-talk here and I'll let you phrase how you want to phrase the Dafter Draft, because I don't want to mess up exactly how we want to talk about this.
Yes. Daft or draft, Omarion Hampton is the RB2 in this class. That's it. It's as simple as that.
Yeah, that is pretty simple.
Is he RB2 or is he not? Because I think there are people, and I know Dame is one of them. I believe he's doing work for 33rd team right now, but I know he's somebody who even posed the question, how close is Omarion Hampton potentially to Ashton Jeanty as a prospect because of the physical gifts that Omarion Hampton has? And the other thing that I will say or ask you, not as a Dafter or draft, but as a general question, is he a better athlete than Nick Singleton?
Ooh. Omarion Hampton's a pretty darn good athlete.
Mm-hmm.
I think my issue with Omarion Hampton and why I'm going to adapt this overall, I don't love bumper car running backs and how they translate to the NFL level. And what I mean by a bumper car running back is their predominant way of churning out extra yards or making people miss is to run through contact. Like if that's their primary way of making things happen, that tends to not translate the way that it does at the college level, because you're tackling guys
they're going to be a
count. Yeah, right. So, I mean, his burst is, I even think the long speed is there with Omarion Hampton. Yeah. I do think he's tight in the ankles. I think the same way that I think about Quinshon Judkins is tight in the ankles, I think Omarion Hampton is tight in the ankles in that way as well. So I don't think he's got that put my foot in the ground and make a man miss in the open field. And I mean, this goes back to like talking with Jordan Reed when I did my What to Watch For in Scouting Running Back series, and Blake Corum was the example used of like Blake Corum might be a 4.5 guy, but if a 4.3 guy doesn't have patience or doesn't see lanes, then he's a 4.5 guy in the field too. I think Omarion Press is still a lot because I think he just thinks I'll just run through anybody's in my way anyway. In terms of gaps and trying to set up blocks. So I think I'm still going to daft this because I continue to just love the way that Caleb Johnson runs the football, the patience that he runs with to set up his blocks, the eyes he has to see backside cuts that open up, the foot speed in the backfield as he's letting these lanes develop. They don't target him a lot, but he's got soft hands out of the backfield, doesn't have that long speed, but does have that initial burst. To me, that's a much cleaner projection to the NFL than a guy who I don't think is a super fluid athlete in the open field and whose primary way of making men miss is to try to just run through their face.
Yeah. So I personally daft this. I think between whatever you want to do in the draft here, between him and Nick Singleton and Caleb Johnson, be my guest. I'm not going to argue about any of them. Now, if you're a predominantly wide zone team and you don't draft Caleb Johnson, I'm going to cock my head at you a little bit. But I do think we've seen, and PFF doesn't do a great job of, they do a great job of the zone and gap stuff. But they run a lot of duo as well with him. And I think that they throw that in as a zone run because it really kind of mimics what inside zone is for the most part. That's why everybody asks, is it inside zone or is it duo? And so with me, I've seen him run a lot more zone this year. They're using him in probably 2-to-1 almost zone to gap stuff this year. And we've seen the growth with his vision. What I will say is I think that the just running into offensive linemen's backs or running into the first guy he sees has become a lot more situational this year. He's doing it more on third and shorts and things like that. But what I also will say, and what keeps him from being RB2 for me, is exactly what you talked about with his ankles. He has the ability to make guys not necessarily miss, but he makes them, he's agile enough to get contacted, and then his explosiveness and lower body strength and build allows him to break that very weak tackle.
Yeah.
But he's not somebody, and what keeps him, and everybody is probably looking at me like, Dalton, how in the hell could you say that Nick Singleton with that production compared to Omarion's production is the same? Well, I will say that Singleton has always played in a very heavy running back by committee at Penn State. And the other thing I will say is I want to see what you can do with the touches that you get. And what I see from Singleton that puts him over for me is the overall well-roundedness of his game. I think Omarion Hampton is a very good pass catcher out of the backfield as well. I think that he is a good pass protector. I think that Singleton is better at both. I think Singleton, at the same size, is as explosive and has better ability to make guys miss with his agility, with his fluidity. And then you have Caleb Johnson, for me, who lacks the explosiveness of those two guys, but is just such a beautiful runner that it's impossible to ignore. And so for me, these guys, like on my big board right now, if I can look it up, we are looking at the difference between, once I get to it, we are looking at the difference between Caleb Johnson is player number 19 on my board right now. Nick Singleton is 21 and Omarion Hampton is 24. And this is a numerical grading scale. These numbers are close. It is like a half of a point on a trait, a point on a trait difference between these guys. And so that's why I won't argue whatever decision you make here, unless you are a predominantly wide zone team and you don't draft Caleb Johnson. I'll just say that again. But even the teams that we know that are very zone heavy, we've talked about this before. The Rams, Sean McVay, running a lot more gap stuff, a lot more power stuff to mix things up. And so you're seeing that you have to be able to do both. You can't just be a one-trick pony at the NFL level. And then you have to wonder about Caleb Johnson a little bit and what he can do, because they are almost exclusively zone at Iowa. Now, with his build, I think that he could just be okay. You tell him to run downhill, I'm sure that he probably could. I think it's the zone eyes are a lot more difficult to teach than
gap. Oh, yeah.
And so, again, don't really care how you stack these guys. Me personally, I'm going to adapt this as well.
Yeah, and that's the important thing to talk about with the running back position, is that like it is the most scheme-dependent position that you're drafting. That and probably like offensive tackles, I would say.
Tight end. Yeah. Tight end could be enough, but tight end is more like, does your offensive coordinator know how to use a tight end or not?
Right, that's fair. Yeah, but like, it is important to remember that as well. Like, if you are the, I'm trying to think of a, like the Washington Commanders and you're living out of gun, that's something to consider, as well as, you know, the Browns. Like, I'm thinking of like the 2020, 2021 Browns, where like all they did was spam wide zone because Nick Chubb could find any line possible. Like, things like that. You have to be aware of the fact that you're drafting that system as well. All right. Third Dafter draft here. We're going to talk more in depth on Friday's episode about the college football playoffs, as the new rankings just dropped right before we started recording. But one of the main things that did drop was that Boise State is the 4 seed now, and the Big 12 leader BYU is now the 12 seed, because the college football playoffs rules stipulates that it's the four highest seeded conference champions get the top 4 seeds. And technically, BYU is seeded higher than the Big 12 champion. And so our last daft or draft here is going to be, Boise State deserves to be ranked higher than the Big 12 conference champion winner.
I mean, let's just look at the schedule. They, Boise State's only close game this year, their only close game this year, was the game that they lost against the best team in the nation. That's it. They lost by 3 points to the best team in the country. They actually kind of had a close one against Georgia Southern in week one. They won by 11. But they beat the doors off of Washington State, beat UNLV by only 5, beat Nevada by 7, but blowouts against San Diego State, blowouts against San Jose State, Hawaii, Utah State, Washington State. And so I do believe that that's a football team, especially with somebody like JT, who, I mean, his gravity watching that Oregon tape was outrageous, because they were able to throw the ball and get really easy looks throwing the ball because of his gravity in the box. When I look at BYU, they also have a pretty good resume. Their only loss was this past week to Kansas, and that loss to Kansas does hurt. This is a what have you done for me lately league. But really impressive win against an Arizona team that we thought was pretty good. SMU, who is a good football team, they beat by 3. Kansas State, they blew the doors off of. And so they do have a pretty good resume, but in the last 2 weeks, they beat Utah by 1 and they lost Kansas by 4. And so we're looking at the difference really between BYU, who has had a good year all year, but we kind of thought was fraudulent, and then the team also in the Big 12, Colorado, whose resume is not very good, but they are going to have every opportunity to make the college football playoff if they get through Kansas and then they beat Oklahoma State and get to the conference championship game. They have two losses, one to Kansas State by three. That's when we thought Kansas State was a really good football team. And Nebraska early in the year. And that Nebraska loss really hurts because I do think that Colorado is the much better football team at this point. But I also think Colorado kind of figured it out as the season went on, which in the NFL is fine because you have a 17-game schedule. You're going to lose four, five, six, seven games pretty much no matter what. You don't have that luxury of these down weeks. It's a little bit more with 12 teams making the playoff now, but not in the Big 12 where you're playing fake football anyways. And so for me, I look at Boise State's resume. I look at that Oregon game specifically, man, and they just played such a good game. And I don't think that Oregon played that poorly. And so for me, I believe that the Broncos deserve to be ranked above BYU and Colorado, even though they're not in a P4 conference, because at the end of the day, I believe that the best four teams should be the top four seeds and not just conference winners, but I'm going to take the best four conference winners every day.
Yeah. I think, man, this is so twofold because I think I'm going to draft it. And I don't feel good about it. But BYU's resume is pretty strong. Mm-hmm. I know they had that loss to Kansas, but I mean, they beat a team that's probably going to play in the ACC championship right now, early in the season. And not only that, but they will have one more ranked game this weekend too. So if they beat Arizona State ranked 21, that's another ranked opponent that they beat. Again, Colorado doesn't have any.
Yeah. BYU, and neither does Boise.
Neither does, well, Boise has two. They beat Washington State and UNLV, who are both ranked 25 and 22 or 23 or something like that.
Yeah.
But I think if Colorado wins the Big 12, I will draft it. But if BYU wins the Big 12, I will draft it, if that makes sense. Just because, again, we'd be talking about, I mean, assuming it is Colorado, I feel like Colorado.
But at that point, Colorado has won 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 games in a row, one of them being against BYU.
Yeah, and they are ranked 16. So I'm going to draft it overall then. We're going to draft it.
Okay. And they have Shador. Like, they have the quarterback.
That's true. I'm not going to pretend like the Big 12 is some step up. It's a step up, but it's some massive step up from the level of competition in the Mountain West. Because I don't think it's that big.
I think the average. I don't think, maybe not at the top of the Mountain West, but I do think the average.
Yeah, like the Wyoming
team has more because they're going to recruit better than the Mountain West Conference will.
Yeah, so I'm gonna draft it. Colorado's sitting 16 right now. They beat BYU, who's sitting 12. Like that's a top 15 win. They'll be in the top 15 by the time they get to the Big 12 championship game too. Assuming Kansas is playing good football. They started out the season really, really poorly, but now they've started to play some good football over their last two, beating Iowa State and BYU.
So two teams have a really explosive back, and they have a really explosive quarterback as well.
Yep. So I will be watching that game against Kansas pretty closely this weekend, but I'm going to adapt that Boise State should be ranked higher than the Big 12 championship game just because it's so hard because you can't count. I mean, you can kind of count a loss like that 3-point loss to the number one team in the nation. I think you have to weigh that as well. But man, I mean, we're talking about, I mean, who's BYU or Boise State going to play in the Mountain West championship game? Are Washington State or Oregon State eligible for the game, or do they just have the Mountain West schedule?
I think it's just the Mountain West.
I think it's just the Mountain West schedule that they were played in. So they play UNLV again, which would be another top 25 win. But yeah, I'm going to adapt it and say that BYU or Colorado deserves to be, or Arizona State I'm not going to – Arizona State has played themselves into ranked territory now as well, and they've got a big game against BYU this weekend. So I'm going to say that the Big 12 winner does deserve to be ranked higher than Boise State still.
All right. A little bit of a disagreement there at the end, but it was a really tough one because you're kind of trying to stack resumes, trying to stack like how we think that the teams have played so far this year. And although we believe that the Big 12 is fake football within the Power Four conferences, and to be honest, the ACC kind of is as well, outside of what? I mean, I like the toughness of Georgia Tech. Virginia Tech's kind of fun. But, like, how many good football teams are in the ACC? Because, like, it wouldn't surprise me at all if Boise State was actually a better football team than Miami. And Miami just has Cam Ward and Xavier Restrepo. Because, like, I don't think that Miami defense is good at all. Now, they're better athletes probably than Boise State. But there's something about that football team that just doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me. And has consistently played down to its competition, like, weekly in the ACC. So I wouldn't be surprised at all if they matched up in the college football playoff and Boise State ended up beating Miami in the college football playoff matchup. But I do understand the viewpoint of drafting that because I do think that overall BYU's resume is tough to argue against.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, agreed. I just think, you know, we're talking about a season long and I don't know if I want to use this argument because you could make this argument against like SEC supremacy, and I don't believe in SEC supremacy, but what I'm about to say probably plays into SEC supremacy a little bit is like, I just think that the schedule is more grueling season long.
Absolutely. And that's what
I say that and I'm like, but that just means that SEC, like five SEC schools should get in because they all play each other and that's the toughest schedule. But
yeah,
you know, but.
Well, I mean, if we're really being 100 about it, as the kids say, it's the Big Ten and the SEC. Like, those are the two real conferences. And until the super conferences get made and there are 32 teams in the super conference, like the NFL, until that happens, it's going to be the Big Ten and the SEC reigning supreme. I can't see. There will always be an ACC team or two. There will always be a Big 12 team or two, but like you said, the SEC is more grueling because they recruit their tails off. They recruit their tails off in the Big 10 as well. Mm-hmm. They recruit a little bit differently overall, I think, but those are the two power conferences in college football.
Yeah. Agreed. Until further notice. So, but that's it. That's all we got for another edition of Dafter Draft on the Daft on Draft podcast. Mm-hmm. I always love these Wednesday episodes. They're a lot of fun. But all right. Well, we'll be back tomorrow for our first edition of Building Our Board. So this is going to be fun. We're getting into it here. So be prepared for that. At the top, we'll have a lot less disagreements than we will near when we get into like the 40s and 50s. But we will work through our boards. And we're getting to that point in the season. So. Until tomorrow, I've been Corey Kinnett, and that is Dalton Miller, and this has been the Daft on Draft podcast.